Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
People think about personalization in terms of, you know, when they think personalized nutrition, the kind of the opportunities that like tech and data and AI bring to be able to make that even better.
An award-winning fertility dietitian and the founder of Fertility Dietitian UK, recognized as one of the UK's leading specialist fertility dietitians.
Her work likely involves providing nutritional guidance and support to individuals and couples navigating fertility challenges, helping them optimize their diets for improved reproductive health.
Roe Huntress.
Earlier, we always had like, okay, let's listen to a famous influencer or someone is in a good shape, like role models or someone. But we know that one size fits all doesn't really work.
We focus on like different habits, and some of the core habits that we focus on, something that may be around intermittent fasting, something that may be around healthy eating, and something that may be around activity, where they are, like where their behaviors have been, and trying to at least keep them at that level or up them a little bit. So it's also personalized in that sense.
Hello and welcome, friends, back to the Shift with CJ podcast. Today, I have a special guest for you. Today's guest is Ms. Roe Huntress. She's a registered dietitian and she's got not much, but like two master's degree, a bunch of awards, 13 years of experience in getting people to their best health. But what makes her really cool is that she is now taking a different approach where she's mixing science with technology. Yep. To make things accessible and easy for everyone. She is the chief nutrition officer at The Simple App. And they're helping hundreds and thousands of people to improve their health, their vitality, help them lose weight, all the cool stuff. So today, I want to dive deep with her and see how does technology and science come in together? Ro, are you ready?
I am ready. Let's go.
Let's hit it. Okay, perfect. Firstly, welcome to the show. And I'm super happy to have you. Now, you know, the internet is a crazy place. The world is a crazy place. Every person you ask for some sort of an advice has a different opinion on a lot of things. Before, like now people go to ChatGPT and different kind of AI, but back in the day, I remember when I was obese, I was asking every person I knew. This was like 15 years ago. There was the computer, but we didn't really use it. I was asking every person that looked good, hey, what can I do to look like you? And everyone gave me a different piece of advice. And now we're in this age where we can use technology to give us like personalized advice. So is this something real? Is this one of these trends that is going to come and go? What do you think?
In terms of tech, like personalization is really here to stay. And I think people think about personalization in terms of, you know, when they think personalized nutrition and then they think CGMs or they think the gut microbiome or like nutrigenomics. But actually, in terms of the app space, the whole experience, there's opportunity for personalization. And I guess what we're trying to achieve in health tech is basically we're trying to achieve a human-like experience. So like someone would get with a coach, but we also want to use the kind of the opportunities that like tech and data and AI bring to be able to make that even better. So for example, you know, when people come through what we call onboarding, so when people answer the questions to come into the app, we're then able to personalize the advice that's given to them from day zero as soon as they come in. So one of the mechanisms by which we support weight loss is intermittent fasting, so time-restricted eating, eating within an eating window. From the information that they give us, we're able to suggest what may be an optimal fasting protocol for them, and that's based upon what they've told us, but also what we know from the huge amounts of data that we have from our users. But also, you know, on that note, we can make suggestions, but the choice always lies with the user. We can suggest that you do this, but you can alter it, you know, as you see fit. So people's initial plan is personalized, and then even the day-to-day experience is personalized. So we have a daily check-in, for example, and you know, how are you feeling? And then one of those questions is, you know, how energized are you feeling? How ready to attack the day are you? And it can kind of like be low, medium, high. If they're feeling like they've got high energy, we'll give them like 3 tasks for the day. If they're feeling low, we'll give them 1. Even kind of like personalized, just feedback on like the foods that they're consuming, that is unique to them and their certain behaviors. And then what's a really, really nice element is the personalization of like AI coaches that guide people through. So it's that real feel of personalization. People feel kind of like listened to, they feel heard, they feel understood. And a key thing that actually really helps with this is memory. So like when AI coaches kind of like first started, it was very much like a chatbot kind of experience. But now being able to bring in like the memory elements and like the coach remembers why a user wants to lose weight and having these conversations and then, you know, recalling something from like a few weeks ago, all these things add into the personalization. So yeah, there's just huge opportunities really. And I think these opportunities are only going to grow.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because, you know, earlier we always had like, okay, let's listen to a famous influencer or someone who really good is in a good shape, like role models or someone. But we know that one size fits all doesn't really work. What works for you is different from what works for your neighbor. Like if someone is on a carnivore diet, doesn't mean it's going to work for you. If someone's on a vegan diet, it doesn't work for you. We also know that identical twins have different based on their lifestyle, based on their behavior, the kind of food they eat, they completely have different responses to different things. So even if you're with the same genetics, things can be different. So I love this idea of, you know, looking at a person individually, because we are all different from a biochemical level, and then zooming in to what that person needs. And it's interesting. Like, so for example, you mentioned about tasks. What would be, and like, let's say if you had to name 3 tasks, what are like 3 tasks that the app will show you?
So we focus on like different habits, and some of the core habits that we focus on are, so something that may be around intermittent fasting, something that may be around healthy eating, and something that may be around activity. And also where we're moving to as well is that if people actually just want to focus on the activity and the nutrition and forget the fasting, this is something that we're kind of like working to be able to provide now. But also with the tasks, we want them to be simple, right? Our name's simple, so like everything that we do, we want to live by that. So for example, with fasting, that task may just be start your fast at 9 p.m or log your fast, because sometimes like people do it but then they might not log. But what we do see is the people that are more active on the app, they are the people that get the better results. And I'm not saying kind of like people who log 20 times per day. It's like how many days per week does somebody log something? So it's getting them in there. It's reminding them, okay, so start your fast. It may be as simple as that. And then a task for nutrition may be have a high protein lunch. Or include some fiber-rich foods in your evening meal. So it's just making people be mindful. They're not too extravagant or difficult a task. Like people can do them. And then, you know, with activity, it might be related to their, you know, the target that's set out for them. But it may be, you know, go for a 30-minute walk today, or aim for 20 minutes of activity. And it will be relevant to where they are, like where their behaviors have been, and trying to at least keep them at that level or up them a little bit. So it's also personalized in that sense.
Okay, so you're focusing more on building these tiny habits, like the research from BJ Fogg at Stanford, which says like, hey, instead of like overwhelming your body, overwhelming your decision making, overwhelming your nervous system, choose one tiny thing, but do it consistently over a period of time. And then you have these small incremental changes, which don't look as much. Like, let's say, for example, three tasks per day wouldn't look as if it's so much and it's easily accomplishable. And that's a trap, because a lot of people are not able to do it consistently enough for long periods of time. And once you have a friend, a coach, an app, or someone who like taps on you on your shoulder, or like just gives you a notification and say, hey, remember you promised that, you know, you had to lose weight for this wedding and you committed to having this one task per day. It also kind of like rewires your brain in a certain way and says like, okay, someone's asking me to be accountable, or I am remembering a promise that I did to myself. And if I can't stand up to that, if it's in the most simplest way, what else am I going to do in life? So I think it's super smart the way you guys are looking at it. This brings me to another kind of like scenario. So do you think for better health, we look at like, you know, oh, I have to do my cold plunge and I have to like, you know, diet and I have to do all of these things. Do you, or mostly let's talk about diet, because if even I would say like 70 to 80% of the world right now, if you ask them like, hey, you want to lose weight? Like the first thing they're going to think about is, okay, I need to diet. That's the first thing that comes into everyone's mind. Of course, it's changing really rapidly, but we're not there where everyone like thinks about habits versus diet. So do you think people should take this new approach of mostly thinking, okay, not like, hey, for example, like a scenario in my head would be like, hey, I want to lose five kgs. I need to diet. I need to cut down, versus like, I actually want to be a healthy person. And right now, this one thing, which is in front of me, the cookie, is not going to contribute for me being healthy. So it's more of like choosing habits versus diet. Would that make sense?
I think it's a really interesting point. And, you know, certainly in the time that I've been a dietitian, but even being aware of how weight loss was viewed, you know, in the 90s, if we think back to that era, and I think about some of like the adverts now that we used to see, or even like how weight loss was communicated in the media, and the diets that were, you know, there was a new diet like every week in a newspaper, in a tabloid, in a magazine. Mm-hmm. And
I tried all of them.
Yes. And then they were these kind of like these more extreme ones. And you know what? You know, people kind of like get excited by those. But certainly what I have seen is there has been a shift, because I think people now understand that the more extreme things that are short term, they don't work. They can work for like the short term, but then we just don't see like the long lasting results. So I do really think that there has been a shift in the understanding of what is required. And it really, you know, fair enough, if somebody's looking to lose weight for a particular event in the summer, then we're like, cool, right, let's go, we're all in. But actually, the more important thing for like long-term health and well-being is finding something that is going to support you along that longer journey. And this is when, you know, the establishments of these little micro habits that we were just saying, like, this is what's important. But, you know, in terms of all diets as such, the thing that makes them successful is if people are adhering to them. Mm-hmm. And with those more intense diets, that's really difficult to adhere to in the long term. If we're talking about these micro habits and actually just committing to doing this daily, or, you know, 5 out of 7 days a week, these are the things that are actually sustainable. And it's even, you know, say like with intermittent fasting as well, and like the time restricted eating, eating within an eating window, it doesn't need to be really extreme. And that's certainly not what we recommend. You know, most people may go for a 16-8 and find that actually like, you know, I can do this, and I can actually do this over the long term. And this is, you know, when some of like research and academics that work in this area, what they say is one of the reasons why this is kind of like so appealing for the longer term is that people can stick to it and they can go for a 14-10. We have some people on a 12-12. So they actually just fast for 12 hours and then kind of like consume within that working at that eating window. But then by focusing on the diet and on the activity, it gets them to where they need and want to get to. It can take a little bit of time, but they get there. So yeah, I think the long game is important. And I think that certainly healthcare professionals know this, but I feel that the general public are starting to understand this more and more.
And so, for example, like at Simple, are you guys more focused on like health or wellness, or are you focused on weight loss, or it's just like it depends on like the person and their goal? If they come in and they answer a few questions and then the AI says, oh, okay, perfect, this person's goals is getting maybe fit or getting a six pack or just, you know, making sure they don't get injured.
So our primary focus right now is weight loss, and that's where it has been. However, it's not to say that in the future we won't move towards just general kind of like health management, because obviously people are losing weight, but then as a result of this, they're feeling more energized, their mood's improved, they've got less joint pain, you know, even though we're not actively targeting like blood pressure and HbA1c, so diabetes markers, they're all improving. So indirectly, people are having big improvements on their health. But you know, me as somebody with a healthy BMI, I still really enjoy using the app. Like some of the features like AI food image recognition, I love taking a snap of my lunch, seeing if the AI can figure out what it is. It always does. It's highly accurate, and it just like even that kind of like, you know, even that blows my mind. But it, and I'm like, you know, because it gives a nutrition score afterwards, and again, just kept really simple. Is it optimal, good, fair or low? And I'm like, even though, you know, I was behind the creation of it, I'm like, what's it going to tell me? What's it going to be? So I feel that, yeah, in terms of health maintenance, it's actually a really good tool. So I wouldn't be surprised if we expand to that in the future. But right now, you know, we've committed to supporting people to lose weight, because that solution in the wide society hasn't quite been found yet. We feel that we're really like, you know, we're working towards that. So it will remain to be our primary focus.
I mean, there is these GLP-1s like Ozempics, which are also kind of like simple, quote unquote. Like, but what are your takes on them? Have you tried one? Have you guys looked into it?
Yeah, so I think it's a really, really interesting and, to be honest, an exciting area. You know, because I go to conferences about obesity and weight management, you know, all over the world, and GLP-1s have a big focus at every conference, because we can't ignore their success. Can't ignore their success. And for some people who, you know, for whom lifestyle is really, really difficult, it can provide another solution, and, you know, and a good one. So, you know, it's definitely part of the conversation. However, not everybody wants to be on medication. Not everybody wants to have to inject themselves. So it's like, and also, you know, there's the side effects that come along with that, the nausea, and, you know, people can feel unwell from it. And some people obviously don't want that. And then there's the flip side of the GLP-1s, where we see the big weight regain when people stop. Obviously, because some people will just take the medication and focus on nothing else. That's not a good way to do it. It's really, really important to be focusing on the nutrition as well. You know, high fiber, high protein diets, lower in kind of like ultra processed foods, foods that are high in sugar, saturated fat, etc. Number one, you know, it's good for health. But number two, even when you do come off those medications, that will help to prevent such a big weight regain that we see in a lot of people. And another thing that can be seen with GLP-1s is big losses in lean mass. So again, another reason why ensuring that we have sufficient protein and high protein intake is accompanied. But yeah, no, we certainly pay attention to it, and it can be kind of like a good, something like Simple or like a lifestyle, you know, a lifestyle intervention is a good thing often to have alongside, because it makes you more mindful and still kind of like in control, as opposed to like the medication being in control. It's like, okay, I'm still driving this. But yeah, a super interesting field for sure.
I think you hit the nail on the spot where you mentioned those three things, because the first generation, first or second generation of people who went on Ozempic or Mounjaro or all of these different brand names, one of the biggest things that was lacking was like lack of education. Just like you said, no one told them how to eat right in the first place. No one told them how to move. No one told them like, hey, what's the importance of like maintaining lean muscle mass? What's the importance of having higher amounts of protein? What's the importance of actually going ahead and doing some resistance training? Because if that would have happened, we probably wouldn't have seen. And I think like in the beginning, everyone just got so excited that they went on crazy doses. Like I'm now investigating on looking at GLP-1s, but like super, super microdosing them, like 1/12th of a dose or something, and not increasing them with time, because there are also some longevity benefits. Like you said, you know, the blood pressure can get low, like metabolic syndrome can. I mean, your HbA1c can go low. Like there are so many things, right? Anyway, so since you guys are focus on weight loss, you know, I mean, I've had this multiple times, but I'm sure people who are listening have experienced this as well. Usually you go on a diet or you go on something and then you lose a bunch of weight and then it stops. And then you're like, this doesn't work. So a lot of people, back in the day, we used to call it like hitting the wall. So a lot of people hit this wall. What do you why do you think like that happens? And like, let's say someone hit the wall, can they still use some of the simple stuff and like break that wall or jump that wall or go in a different direction? Like,
yeah. So I think first thing to note is that if you hit the wall, so basically we'll call it like a plateau, we still need to actually celebrate this like as a success, because when people reach this plateau or this wall, they're like, damn. And then they just get frustrated because they can't move further. And then they actually forget what they have achieved. And, you know, that they're in such a better place now than where they were. So it's really important that people actually like hold on to that. We actually see, because we have, you know, like, God, so many, you know, like reviews from the app store that come in like every day. And what we often see is, oh, I was at a plateau and then they came here and then it's like, oh, okay, like I've moved past it. But take it kind of like more generally, it's really important at that point. It's like, okay, let's have a check-in. And you can have a check-in if you have, you know, a dietitian or a coach, you can check in with them. If you have an AI coach, you can check it with them. But actually, if you don't have access to those things, you can just check in with yourself and say, okay, so what am I doing? Let's just do a little self-assessment. Like, what is my diet looking like at the moment? Is there any room for improvement, you know, beyond what I'm doing at the moment? Have any of my habits slipped a little bit? What am I doing in terms of my activity? Could I be improving that in any other way? And then kind of like even looking beyond that, you know, habits that influence our behaviors. So like, how is my sleep? Could I be improving that? How are my stress levels? Could I be improving that? And then it's just basically, it's trying to find the why, and then just kind of like then just making those changes. But yeah, it's always possible to get past this plateau. And I remember, you know, working as a dietitian in our healthcare system in the UK, we often spoke about like the staircase of weight loss, and it kind of like mimics what you've said to a degree, in that you have a down bit and then you have an across bit. And then some people get annoyed at that point and then they leave. If you leave, it's likely you'll go back up to where you were. But actually, if you stay there, you persevere, you figure out what it is you need to do to get you down onto the next step, then it's we're going down. But we do quite often see this staircase where we have loss, maintain, loss, maintain, loss, maintain. But that is a successful weight loss journey. It's like when it goes up, 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 back and beyond, that's what we want to try and prevent. So yeah, I do encourage people when they do get to this wall, celebrate that you got to this you know, point that is you know, a progression from where you were, because often we forget to celebrate those points.
So everyone, you heard Ro right here, celebrate anything that you do. I think as humans, like, it used to happen a lot before, but nowadays we don't give ourselves enough like credit. We don't celebrate enough. And we're always like looking for the next best thing, but we're not satisfied in the moment. So that can sometimes reverse fire. So if you're listening to this, take a moment, take a deep breath. And yeah, you're better than where you were yesterday. So celebrate it. Don't, yeah, because everyone, like you can actually extend this example in many things. You can extend this example in parenthood, in business, in whatever. People usually come right till the end, but they don't stick, like they don't persevere enough. And like their destination is right in front of them, but they just quit too early. And they just went down a little bit more. They could have achieved whatever they wanted to. Mm-hmm. But so we know that right now that a lot of people, like, you know, we're talking about the 90s, maybe a few people are not born in the 90s, but they're born after that. But like it's much more easier to find people who are health conscious now. I guess like everyone to a degree. I live in Dubai. So here for sure, like find health conscious people everywhere. They want to be healthy. Maybe they're not doing the right things to be healthy. Yeah, they're going to the gym. Maybe they look great, but maybe they're not really like tapping into what real health is. So I want to ask you, we'll keep this to weight loss. What are some of the weight loss mistakes that even like people who think they're healthy are making? What do you think?
Okay, so if we're talking about people who feel that they're eating and they're living well, mm-hmm. but they're not losing weight.
Yeah.
Okay, so examples may be, and again, so this isn't to demonize certain foods, but say, for example, not necessarily understanding like calorie density of certain foods.
Mm-hmm.
So foods that are healthy, so things like olive oil, things like avocados, nuts, they are healthy foods and we want to have them as part of our diet, but they're also high fat foods.
Nine calories.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, when we look at like carbs and protein, kind of like 4 calories per gram, in terms of fat is 9 calories per gram. And people sometimes, you know, I remember when I used to work with people in clinic and they were like, oh, well, I had a pack of nuts, you know, and we're talking about big, like 200 gram packets of nuts. And I was like, I see the problem. And then people are then quite shocked to kind of like know that a portion of nuts is kind of 25 to 30 grams. So something like that. Also, people can, you know, eat really well and then maybe not understand the calories that can be in alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like even in, say, a pint of beer, for example, is like 200 calories. And then so if, you know, a guy is going out on a night, you know, quite common in London to mm-hmm. go out 5 pints, then that's mm-hmm. another 1,000 calories. So those kind of things. And then also not realizing the hidden calories in, say, if people are eating out in restaurants, for example, and it can look great, it can look healthy, but, you know, we're not necessarily aware of, you know, like the sauces, the oils, and generally they, you know, they, things in restaurants and certainly takeaways will be higher in calories than mm-hmm. what we may cook at home. And then I think maybe another thing as well is putting too much of a reliance on activity to manage weight. Of course, it can impact it. But the thing really that should be the foundation is diet, because we're not mm-hmm. always in control of when, you know, you can break your ankle. And then if you break your ankle, what dietary foundation do we have to rely on? So I think it is important to have diet as a foundation, not just ignore that and focus solely on activity, mm-hmm. but actually bringing them both together.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you have like a cookie or half a cookie, you actually have to run for 30 minutes to like burn 80% of it. So most of the people who tell me like, you know, hey, I go to the gym and I can kind of like, I go to the gym for 45 minutes or an hour. I'm like, you're not burning even one cookie in that 45 minute session, especially if you're doing strength training. Yeah, that's a different thing. Like your hormones are changing and like, you know, you might gain some muscle and that will offset some of the glucose. But And the other thing that you mentioned is very interesting is alcohol. I know like the part of the world that you're in, this problem is much more relevant here as well. But like that part of the world, it's much more of an interesting thing about alcohol is like, although it has like 7 calories per gram, the way your body prioritizes the burning of this metabolic, fuel. So it's not, basically it has no nutrients, right? So it's like, it's in there as extra calories. And when you kind of like have to burn, I mean, like you move out, you go to the gym next day, first thing your body prioritizes is burning off that alcohol, and then it'll go to your fat carb stores. And once your carb stores are gone, then it'll go to your fat stores. And usually, I don't know about most people who are listening to this, but if I'm drinking, I love to eat and I'm eating more. And like, if you drink a lot, then you end up like, you know, the only thing that's open at 4 a.m. is McDonald's and nothing else. So thank God I don't drink, but I remember my younger days. So anyway, another thing is, a lot of people are so obsessed about losing weight. They're like, I want to lose weight. I want to, like, a lot of people like reaching to me as well. CJ, what's the best way I can lose weight? And like, do you want to lose weight or do you want to lose fat? And they're like, Like that's, and I'm sure in your career as well, you've got a lot of people who've come to this. So I mean, if those people who haven't heard me talk about it, or can you just give them a basic overview of what is weight loss versus what is fat loss and what should people be looking for?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, when most people are talking about weight loss, they're thinking about fat loss, because, you know, it's generally, you know, the fat stores that we have, you know, around the middle, but it can kind of like be on other areas of the body as well. This is, you know, when people are kind of like thinking aesthetically, this is kind of like generally the weight that people want to lose, but also from a health perspective as well. The biggest risk factor for kind of like chronic ill health from a metabolic standpoint is weight that we carry around the middle. So that is generally the weight that we want to lose. But we kind of touched on it when we spoke about GLP-1s before. With weight loss can also come muscle loss. And that is the kind of weight that we don't want to lose. It's important to keep it for our general well-being, for our strength. And this becomes particularly important in older adults. But also, having a higher muscle mass means that we burn more calories at rest. So it's really important for various reasons to maintain our muscle mass whilst achieving fat loss when we're looking at overall weight loss. And it's certainly a premise that, you know, I work by as a dietitian, and, you know, Simple We Do as a philosophy is like high protein. It helps not just maintain muscle mass, but it helps in other capacities in terms of supporting satiety. It's like if you have a high protein meal, you will be so much fuller than having a meal of just like carbs and salad. For example, like it genuinely really, really works. So yeah, protein is absolutely an important contributor here.
Yeah, it's so important. And I can, like, this really hits home for me because usually I'm on a high protein diet, but I was doing this liver and gallbladder flush. And because of that, I couldn't have a lot of protein and I couldn't have a lot of fat and I couldn't have a lot of salt. So there was so many restrictions and I started doing it. I just finished it yesterday. So it's a 4-day thing. And I started the first 3 days and then I realized that, you know, I increased like, I mean, there was one source of fat which shouldn't be there. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do it all over again. So overall, I did it for 9 days. And all of these 9 days, because my protein intake was so less and they were advising me to, I mean, the standard protocol is don't eat so heavy and you can't eat fat. So you only have to eat carbs and you can't eat processed carbs. So the only thing you're available is like boring vegetables, maybe some rice and fruits. And trust me, last 9 days, I've been hungry every day. There is no, I mean, I've been vegan for a long period of time. I was a couple of years ago, I think 10 years ago now. But that thing is so interesting because the only thing I wanted to do after coming back today in a normal day is just having more protein because I just don't want my brain to just be like, you're hungry, go pick up something. You're hungry, go pick up something. And if you're listening to this and you're feeling the same, it's not you. It's just the way biology works. You have to increase some of these satiety signals, leptin, CTK, all of these things in your body. Anyway, I want to touch on something. Right now everyone knows it, but I want to know it from you. You can maybe give us like a basic rundown of this. You mentioned intermittent fasting or time restricted feeding.
Yeah.
Because there might be a few people still who don't really, they've heard the lingo, but they don't really understand what it is and how it works. So can you just explain to us like what it is? So move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of like when we're talking about intermittent fasting in general, there are a number of different approaches to it. It's time at which you have a break in essence from food. So you're having a period of fasting when you're not eating or consuming calories. And with time restricted eating, it's kind of the simplest approach, really, because what it means is that you are consuming your calories within a certain window. And as I mentioned before, a very common one that people will hear a lot about is like a 16-8. So whereby people will fast for 16 hours and then they will consume their calories through an 8-hour window. And this fasting period can be extended, it can be shortened. So the longest eating window or the shortest fast that we have is 12 hours. And then, you know, it may go up to an 18-6, even for some people a 24. And then there's other varieties of intermittent fasting as well. So people may have heard of the 5-2 diet, for example. So that is whereby you eat ad libitum. So you eat normally for 5 days of the week. And then on 2 days of the week, you restrict your calories. And generally for women, this is about 500 calories on two of those days. For men, it's about 600 calories. So it really, really is kind of like reducing your calorie intake quite significantly on 2 days of the week. And for some people, that sounds like hell on earth, right? For other people, they're like, oh, okay, so I only actually have to think about this on 2 days of the week. Sounds great. And if you think about it, you know, we're taking for like the, you know, the woman, for example, we're taking, if we're looking at, you know, a calorie kind of like requirement of 2000 calories per day, we're taking 3000 calories per week off that person's plate, if you like. And when you compare that to somebody who's doing a calorie deficit of 500 per day, that's 3,500 per week. So it's very, very similar. And it's just offering, you know, another alternative. And then, you know, another example is like ADF. So alternate day fasting. So it can be similarly where they'd have a day ad libitum and then they would reduce to, say, 500 calories the following day, et cetera, et cetera. So, there's many different variations, but we feel that with time-restricted eating, so just eating within the eating window, it's kind of the easiest one. Mm-hmm. And people can, you know, they can adapt their fasting window to be the length that they want it. They can trial it. If they don't feel it's working, they can change. And even though everybody thinks, oh, 18-6, 16-8, oh God, which one should I do? I'm not sure, I'm in the middle. Just do a 17-7. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a possibility. And people just kind of like think about the ones that they've heard. But it really is just making it, it is just making it work for you. And, you know, what we hear from our users is that, again, it's just coming back to that simplicity. And some people, whereas food rules can be problematic for some people, actually just having some rules to follow. Okay, I'm starting eating here. I'm finishing here. Great. Okay, that's the instruction that I need that works for me. It really helps me to adhere to what I need to be doing. So for our user base, we just feel that it's just one that works really well. Another thing that we like offer as well is to have like no fast days. So if people on a Saturday, for example, they just wanted to, obviously we don't want people to go and have blowouts because then it like, you know, things don't really work. But if you just want to have it a bit more relaxed and not have to think about your eating window on a certain day, of course you can do that. Like You're the boss. You're the boss in your own game. Find out something that works for you. But as we said before, you know, we're really thinking about the long game here. And actually, if having that eating window every day, it's going to mean that you don't adhere to it. Make it easier.
Yeah, sticking to some kind of a plan is better than going in the battlefield and having no plan, right?
Yeah, I think so too.
And do you know about how the 16-8 came along in the first place? Do you know the story?
I feel like you do.
Okay, so I'll tell everyone. So I think the first set of research, mice research that came was from Dr. Sachin Panda's lab out of UCLA in 2000, I would say 13 or something around that time. And he had a research student who was also a university student whose job was to feed the mice and just not feed the mice for certain hours and then go feed the mice and then take notes and all of that stuff. But because he was coming after class, he could only come at a certain time where naturally the mice were only getting fed for like 16. So the mice were naturally fasting for 16 hours and he would come and feed them and then take their measurements. And then they started seeing changes in this mice. So it didn't come up, like, to your point, it could be a 17-7. It's not a magic number. It naturally came up because this poor guy didn't have the time. He had to come after class. And yeah, it's interesting because I still do it, but like I still do a 16 or maybe a 15 sometimes, depends on my training schedule. But I was so obsessive and crazy at a point, like some time back, that I did like OMAD which is one meal per day for about a year, and it trashed me. Like the only advantage I had on my side was like, I'm one of those people who like to do extreme things. And you know, you said something in the beginning that there are people who won't stick to it. I'm that 10% of the population will stick to something, even if I know it's like, it's just inbuilt in me. But if I did it now, I would not do it now. But I did it for a year. It was horrible. It was horrible. Mm. And at that time, it was the trend. So everyone was doing it. I'm like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And the thing is, but you say you stick to it for a year, but could you stick to it for life?
No way. I look at myself and I'm like, that year of my life, I could have, I mean, the amount of parties, the amount of parties I said no to, and oh my God, it's crazy. But I've got a lot of obsessive stories. But anyway, moving on. Tell me something. So the advantage you have versus all of us is that we have access to like generalized AI, like, you know, who knows everything, but he doesn't have enough data, real life data from users. But you have so much real life data from users. Have you discovered like certain patterns or certain trends within the data that you see, which you think applies to most people, that if we kind of like understand from now, we can like not go into that trap and like move around it? Anything comes to mind?
I think the main thing that we see from our data in terms of who is successful is those who are the most adherent. Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes back to my point at the beginning, in that those who we did basically analysis, like looking at those who were low active users, and they were kind of like not active for 33% of that time. Or up to 33% of that time, should I say. Then we've got like moderate up to 66. And then we've got kind of like high active users then in that segment. And it was just, the success was just basically completely linear in terms of like, if we take a week, like the number of days that somebody was active in that week over time, it was kind of a predictor of how successful they were going to be. Mm-hmm. So it's one of our jobs as developers it's nice because, you know, we're encouraging people we're thinking about techniques to try and get people onto the app daily, but it's for a good reason, because if we get them there and doing an action, logging something, we know that their chance for success is going to be greater. Mm-hmm. So that's like it's a key focus for us. And it's kind of an exciting challenge to try and navigate. But other things that we see in the data, we see that men tend to lose weight quicker than women. But then over time, women catch up. Men may choose more stricter protocols. as well in terms of fasting. And again, linearly, as we'd expect, in terms of fasting hours, the longer the fasting hour, the greater the weight loss. But it's not, and as you would expect, because you know you're eating within a shorter window, and the premise by which intermittent fasting works is generally the shorter your eating window, the fewer calories you're consuming. So does that mean that everybody should go on to an 18-6 protocol? No, because it goes back to our previous point of adherence is key. If you are going to adhere to a 12-12 protocol and nothing more, do that and stick to it. You know, you obviously need to think about other things, things as well. But it is, it, again, it's the adherence point that's key. And I think another interesting thing that comes from our data as well, because there's always the assumption that younger people will be the people who will succeed with apps and will succeed with AI. And people are like really shocked when they hear, you know, how many users that we have over the age of 65, like hundreds of thousands. And they love it. And, you know, their commentary around Avo, who is our AI coach, like, it's so heartwarming. It is so heartwarming to read. But yeah, basically, when we get to the year mark, the proportion of people that are achieving 5% weight loss is equal basically across all the different age groups. So it just goes to show like tech and AI can work for and does work for anyone.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you grow up in a world where things were analog, like when we grew up in the world, like things were mostly analog, and now things have become digital. And like, we were never born into like not even when computers were just generally there, right? So we kind of like see the transition, and we were talking about Dubai offline earlier. And every time we notice something or something comes in, like my heart just becomes so much more grateful, and I want to appreciate it, and I want to use it even more because I know these things did not exist. Like we've all gone through the hard stuff. I've been going to restaurants this is embarrassing, with like actually a food scale, because there was no AI to like kind of see how much those cucumbers weigh. It doesn't matter. But like, you know, no one told us, and someone told us like, hey, you have to measure everything. And then you have this notebook. This is before MyFitnessPal came in, and you have to write everything down, and then you have to calculate everything with the calculator at the end of the day. No, and now it's so easy. And I guess that's why some of the older people, they're like, this is the best time to live. Like, we've gone through all the hard stuff.
To be alive. Exactly. I know. Equally, I remember when I was, working with patients one-on-one in our UK health system, the NHS, and people would come to an appointment, they would leave with a food diary, they would fill it in for 2 weeks, and then they would come back, and then we'd have to, you know, assess it like then and there. And it's just so slow. It's so slow. And then, you know, now, as you say, and, you know, it was slow even for them to write what they had, because, you know, at the time it was an era of weighing things. And then now, say with what we call AvoVision, which is like our food image recognition, snap a picture, it correctly identifies all of the items and gives you a pretty accurate weight of the ingredients.
Wow.
So, I know.
That's
and then so,
crazy.
You know, I'm just imagining, you know, you going there to that restaurant with your scales. and then, you know, now it's like people ding, done. And then the feedback as well is, you know, and we utilize AI basically, you know, everywhere that we can. And there's an AI summary that is generated to users when they've logged a meal. Here's the AI summary of what you've told me. These are some things to think of for next time. And when we think about, you know, clinical practice 10 years ago, it was just, you know, they'd have to wait a month for another appointment. Okay, now go and do this. Now you get that instantly. You get it in seconds.
Yeah, the feedback cycles or the closed loop feedback cycles are very tight. So, and that also increases motivation, right? Because if you have to wait for a month to be told what to do, it doesn't work. And most of the people, like, I used to be one of those people in school, like there used to be a homework and I would do it last moment. Like I'd come to school early morning and just try to finish it. And a lot of people, I would assume, because there's data on it, that when you tell people to log on their food and what did you eat last week and all of that stuff, usually they're not doing it every day. They're estimating or guesstimating what they did last week. And most of the people, they will always kind of record Like if they're meant to have 500 calories, they're going to record 450 or 500, but actually they took 1000 calories that day and they don't even remember. So that again breaks the system because you can't go off memory. And that's the great thing about you guys, that you have this whole memory thing inside, which is great. But a lot of people, I mean, we live in this age of, you know, instant gratification. Everything is quick. You press a button, in Dubai at least, still like deliveries are quick. You get everything right so fast. And a lot of people think weight loss is the same. A lot of people that I'm sure you've met as well, they want... A lot of people don't even care about their health. They're just like, I want to lose weight.
Yeah.
Let's do the crash diets. Let me lose my muscle mass. I don't care if I get 80% of my weight back, but I want to do it right now, right now. What do you tell a person like this, if this kind of person is listening to this show?
I mean, it's a bit of tough love, but like it's just not realistic. And it is, and it should be about the long game. And I think people can also get blinded a little bit by when somebody loses weight initially, especially if they're kind of like cutting their carbohydrates. We see, you know, really quite significant weight losses in the first week or two. And then people then expect that every week. And, you know, when in some cases a lot of that is water weight, what we are focusing on is fat loss. And then it's really about thinking what it takes to lose a pound of fat. And in essence, we need to be in a calorie deficit of 500 calories per day to lose a pound of fat in a week. And it's really kind of like making people understand that. So I think having like the realistic expectations and setting goals, you know, that are realistic. And again, coming to kind of like this joint kind of like plan together. And then it's about finding a plan to help you to get there. Okay, so what do things look like at the moment? What changes are we going to need to make to get you there? And then do you think that that's feasible? So yeah, it is about being real. It is about having real conversations because, you know, ultimately, like nobody wants to sell like false dreams. You know, we need to have real talk and then find a plan that's going to help someone to get there.
Okay. You've been in the medical side of things. Now you're in the consumer side of things. What do you think? Like, I mean, and of course, like we talk about like doctors 20 years ago, 10 years ago, they're different from the doctors right now, you know. Anti-aging medicine, performance medicine, longevity medicine, all of these are their own different categories now, even weight loss and stuff like that. What do you think classic doctors or clinicians still have a wrong impression when it comes to like real world nutrition? Not just weight loss, but just real world nutrition. What do they think and what it is really? Are they still following the food pyramid, which is bullshit, or like what's going on?
And tell me what you mean by real world nutrition.
Real world nutrition is like the nutrition that if you're looking at weight loss or you're looking at muscle gain or you're looking at living healthy or you're looking at all of these things, which really drives changes, okay, which is agreed and agreed upon by maybe the latest science or the latest studies or most of the functional people in the functional medicine space versus like saying, oh, you know what? The government tells us to eat this. So like, we're going to have like 70% of our food will be carbs and then 20% will be fat and 10% will be, are they still, what I'm trying to get to is that a lot of the times your healthcare provider, which might be a doctor, is completely clueless about nutrition because they had like a 1 day course on it and like, that's it. So.
Yes. So from that perspective, I mean, some doctors, don't get me wrong, are absolutely amazing who are well-versed in kind of lifestyle medicine. But there are many others that don't get it. So I would say, you know, if you're going to get dietary advice from somebody, get someone who's qualified in nutrition. So I would say, you know, that's a good place to start. But yeah, you know, in terms of, I suppose this can be the frustration with healthcare in general in that, everybody worked. You know, it's evidence-based medicine and it's working on what is in clinical guidelines. And sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a lag time between when, you know, interventions are proving to be successful and then they kind of like come into the mainstream advice. So yes, it can take a little bit of time. But it's, you know, say with intermittent fasting, for example, however long ago, you know, when it first came out, people were like, oh, you know, is oh, it's faddy. But you know, it's been around for that long, and there's so much kind of like research on it that it's kind of like it's become accepted. And potentially, you know, people may say, you know, doctors or like people in the healthcare system may have like more concerns around, say, like ADF than something like, you know, eating within an eating window. Because when you talk about it like that, I eat within an eating window. You know, it's not really that extreme. So yeah, I think it depends upon the practitioner. But a note on public health guidelines is it's for the general population. So it's going to serve a group of people. And I still think it's important to have, right? It's important to have public health guidelines because that's a starting
But do
point.
you think we
But
should
then,
update it? It needs some updates.
we're in need. I mean, well, even in like the American dietary guidelines, they will be updated this year. So I'm really intrigued to know what will be coming out in that. I think that there will be probably more around like ultra processed foods. I think that will be, because on public health guidance, it's not really discussed that much. But obviously, there's so much noise around that now. And especially with kind of like the political changes that are happening in the US and that being kind of like high on their agenda, I do think that we're going to see some changes there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But yeah, I think it is important to interpret public health guidance for you. And then maybe, yeah, adaptations that you need to make to ensure that it serves you the best.
Cool. What's your personal nutrition philosophy? Like we just spoke about like intermittent fasting, and first, like when the first studies and the first people started talking about it, everyone, like even in my example, you go extreme, and then you read the new science, and the new science tells that the old science wasn't that perfect, and then they suggest something new. So let's take all the science apart. Like let's strip away all the science. If you had no science and you had to keep coming back to like some sort of a philosophy around nutrition, what would that be? What would be your personal one?
I think I'm probably a little bit different to other dietitians. Like, you know, when I see or hear, you know, their diets are probably more perfect than what mine are. I feel that like my approach is perhaps a little bit more real. I think I'm more like in like the general public. You know, I get it. But what I'm saying is I think my philosophy is more around like the 80-20 approach. So it's like, you know, eat well, live well, you know, 80% of the time, 20% of the time, you know, enjoy some of like the less nutritious foods that you enjoy, or, you know, have a day that's less active. And, you know, maybe my percentage, it may be higher to like 90-10 or 85-15. But what I'm saying is like, I think the thing that's helped, say, like, even my weight keep consistent and my health keep consistent and my mental health to be like good and strong is like allowing that, you know, to have a treat or to have a slightly inactive day and not feel guilty about it and not tell myself, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Or, you know, just kind of like having that understanding and having that empathy with myself. And, you know, it's also what we embed in the app as well, in like Avo, the coach, and the way in which it talks to people. And like not demonizing, oh, they went to McDonald's.
Shame
Okay.
on you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like it is having that empathy. So yeah, I would say mine is kind of like is the balanced approach. And whether it's 80-20, whether it's 85-15, whether it's 90-10, just including that proportion, you know, like giving yourself a break and being kind to yourself, that's probably my philosophy.
Amazing. So everyone who's listening, be kind to yourself. Don't be too strict. Celebrate and be consistent. We've come to the end of this podcast. And my last question to you is, if you could go back on a time machine, you can choose any age you want, and you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
You know what? Maybe this is a different kind of answer, but I think one of the beauties of life is like not actually knowing stuff, you know, that you know now when you're younger, because I do feel that like life is a journey of discovery. And I really like finding out all the things that I found out, and it brings you to where you are. You know, even with nutrition, I've figured out things that have improved my health. And like, I've done that myself, or even just like in life choices, or, you know, like building my business, or like ending up in tech, they've all happened from avenues and opportunities that have arisen. So it may be a cop-out answer, but I'm quite happy to have found out everything that I've learned along the way. Because I think
I'll take that answer. I'll take that answer. Ro, thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. It was a very cool, refreshing, light conversation. Thank you for breaking down all of the complicated science into some of the most essential and I would say doable, and let me just use the word, simple way.
Yes.
Exactly. So everyone, if you're feeling inspired, if you're feeling motivated, go check out the Simple app, download it. It's not very complex. As the name says, it's simple. One habit per day. You can choose to hydrate, eat slowly, take a walk, take a pause. Anything that you do consistently actually stays with you for long periods of time. And if you found this episode well, you can go follow Ro, follow Simple, follow me, share, like, subscribe, all the cool stuff. I appreciate you, Ro. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Of course. And this is me, CJ, your host, signing out of the Shift with CJ podcast. Everyone, have a great day, a great week, a great lifetime. Take care. I love you all. Bye.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.